From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast with Ben Shulman. I'm Owen Valentine, and I wish we were talking about some positives to start off the show, but unfortunately, in the case of Syracuse football, in the case of this Syracuse offense, there aren't many positives to begin with. Ben, it's been an abysmal 2 weeks, and it all kind of starts with the same problems you saw last season. They have not been fixed in 2020.
Arguably even worse than last season. Yeah. I think the personnel makes a difference. You know, maybe if you have some of the guys that you don't have because of opt-outs or, you know, graduations or drafting to the NFL. But, you know, 16 points through the first two games. Now, it was a very different two matchups to start the season last year, but I believe they had 24 points through the first two games last year. And the defense was not nearly putting the offense in the positions that it is to start drives. It's been bad. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. If you listen or read anything Syracuse sports, then you've seen it over the last couple of days. Tommy DeVito has gotten a lot of flack. The offensive line has gotten a lot of flack as well. And I think maybe the most rightfully so, Dino Babers and Sterling Gilbert have taken a brunt of the blame, because the play calling last week was the same, if not even more predictable than it was against North Carolina.
Yeah, Ben, remember week two of 2019 when Syracuse plays Maryland and got absolutely stomped? In that game alone, they have outscored themselves in the week one and week two games this season. They have not looked good. The offense does not get flowing. They've started with the ball on the opposing side of the field nine times and are averaging 1 point per possession off of those nine opportunities. That's nine total points, three field goals they've gotten, which includes a handful of red zone tries, a handful of turnovers from the defense, a handful of really strong kick or punt returns, putting them in incredible field position, and they cannot capitalize. And as you mentioned, it's got a multitude of factors kind of contributing to this struggle. You've got DeVito's decision-making. You've got the O-line struggling to give him time. The Orange cannot establish the run game because the run game can't work with the running back situation and the O-line situation. And on top of it all, Sterling Gilbert has had terrible play calling in weeks one and two. Absolutely terrible play calling. It seems as if he doesn't really want to win games. That's how, you know, abysmal and miserable and, you know, lackadaisical this play calling seems. Syracuse's strongest assets, arguably, on the offensive side are the tight ends. And I know Sterling Gilbert does not throw to tight ends. I believe it was fewer than 10 completions to tight ends last year for Sterling Gilbert when he was over at McNeese State. And you see that carrying over this year. Aaron Hackett is a very, very, very competent guy to be at the tight end spot. You can target him in the red zone. That's where you saw a lot of success for Syracuse last season, and they have not done it. It is the multitude, the perfect storm, the melting pot of issues for the Syracuse offense, and they can't get anything going.
Yeah, and I want to correct myself. 44 points for Syracuse through the first two games last year, and that was not a great Orange team, and they scored nearly three times as many points as they have through 2 weeks this year, and you hit the nail right on the head. The tight ends, it's absolutely ridiculous that Hackett and even Benson haven't been used. I could argue right now that Hackett may be the best receiver on the team. If not, he's the second best. And Benson is surely in the top four. Yeah. And they have two targets in 2 weeks. It's not even like they're being covered up or Gilbert isn't designing the right plays for them. They're not even trying to get the tight ends the ball. And with the play calling, it comes down to me. This is all encapsulated in one play. It's an early drive in the Pitt game. Syracuse has 3rd and 4 on the 7-yard line. And Rex Culpepper comes into the game to do a QB draw after DeVito had QB drawed the last play.
Yep.
3rd and 4 from the 7. That's a play that was invented for the tight end. Like, you're trying to get to the end zone. It's short yardage. You want a big body. I'm not claiming to be an expert here. That's basic football knowledge. I just don't understand how Syracuse plans to score points without using Benson and Hackett in the offense.
You say, you know, the 3rd and 4 situation, one play prior, it is 2nd and 4, and you run the same play, and then 3rd and 4, you switch the quarterback and run the same play. You've got a 2nd and 4 from the 7-yard line, and you run two plays and don't throw the ball in the end zone one time, or hand the ball off, at least give your running back, the guy who's supposed to run the ball, the chance to get the first down. That's terrible play calling. The red zone play calling in particular has been horrible. And that is the reason, one of the biggest reasons, Syracuse has not been able to put up points. Obviously, we've talked about it. There's a ton of things going wrong. And a lot of questions revolving around this offense, some push from the Syracuse fan base to maybe see Rex Culpepper getting the bulk of the snaps, possibly. I think you're
I wouldn't go that far, but
I think you're going to see a much more balanced look this week, though. I think you're going to see them trying to utilize Culpepper a lot more just because of the simple fact that it wasn't necessarily that the protection was better from the O-line between when Culpepper was in there and when DeVito was in there, but it seemed like Culpepper was at least able to get a throw off far more frequently than DeVito was. And maybe that's just a confidence thing. And at the end of the day, if DeVito's not going to have any confidence, I would personally rather have Rex Culpepper in there with all the confidence in the world, who's at least going to try and make a throw, because DeVito looks very tentative in the back, and he's going to need to fix that mental game so that he can break through and start to make some big passes and big completions. Because through the first 2 weeks of this football season, Tommy DeVito has not completed a pass over 10 yards.
It's been bad, and I know that this opinion is going to conflict directly with that stat, but this week I personally feel is not the time to give up on DeVito yet, only because the Yellow Jackets are susceptible to the deep ball. And I love Rex Culpepper, and his story is incredible. And I really enjoyed watching him play, honestly, because it was just a change of pace. But you can see when the ball comes out of Tommy DeVito's hand and the ball comes out of Rex Culpepper's hand, even though Culpepper had more success, it's a very different caliber of arm. The brain, we can argue. The arm, Tommy DeVito can make throws that Rex Culpepper can't. And I think if you watched Georgia Tech and UCF, you saw it last week. And even when Georgia Tech beat Florida State, those were more just missed opportunities from the Seminoles on deep balls because they play a lot of press coverage. They get up in your face. They're not afraid to blitz. And if by some stroke of luck, DeVito can stay in the pocket long enough and deliver that ball, his receivers will have an opportunity to be open down the sidelines.
Yeah, I want to come in and correct myself a little bit if I was misleading. I am not here to say start Rex Culpepper. I don't think that is the take that should be made yet, nor do I think that that is the right take to be made at this point. However, to see Rex Culpepper come in the game under the same situations, the same amount of pressure, and be able to make a throw and at least get the throw off. Yes, the arm is not the same. Yes, the accuracy is not the same, but it shows that DeVito should be able to be getting a throw off far more frequently than he is. And that is what really opened my eye up out of Culpepper's performance against the Panthers last week. And you mentioned it, it's going to be against a defense in Georgia Tech that does not have great pass pressure and great or D-line statistics so far this season, probably in the bottom of the ACC. I believe they are in the bottom of the ACC in terms of stuff percentage, in terms of run defense. Very vulnerable and somewhere that Syracuse could see some success. So to speak a little bit more on Georgia Tech's defense and maybe where Syracuse could be able to attack the Yellow Jackets D, we caught up with Robert Binion earlier today, who is the Georgia Tech SB Nation beat writer.
I'm here with Robert Binion. Robert is a writer for From the Rumble Seat, Georgia Tech's SB Nation affiliate. And Rob, I know you're not in Atlanta right now. You're in Salt Lake City, as we talked about before we hopped on. But how are you doing today? How has the season been so far? Obviously not a typical year, but how have you done?
You know, it's been fun to get back into football, and it's especially, I think, exciting for where we are in this rebuilding process. Last year was really hard across the board, and being able to jump back in this season, playing two, you know, quality opponents right off the bat, you get a pretty good sense of where things are. And I think all in all, we're really pleased at a lot of the improvement that we've seen from 2019 to 2020, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So we're excited, and we're looking forward to hopefully nine more chances to build on the progress.
Yeah, well, the Yellow Jackets made a ton of headlines in week one when they beat Florida State. That was a massive victory for the program. You talk about after a tough last year, Georgia Tech went 3-9, and focusing on the defense, they allowed over 32 points per game. What have you seen this year from the defense? Of course, two slightly different performances, but what's your feeling about that defensive unit right now?
Yeah, it's been interesting because we've been missing three starters on defense both of the first 2 weeks. We've since found out that one of those guys is going to be out for the year. One of them is probably out for half the season, and another one we hope will be back hopefully this week, if not this week, against Louisville. And so if you had told me that going into the first 2 weeks, I think I would have expected probably even worse results. We were missing the guy who was by far our best defensive tackle, the guy who was expected to be our best defensive end, who was a five-star kid that transferred in from Florida this year, named Antonius Clayton. He's the one that we're hoping to see this year, and also the guy who was by far our best corner, Trey Swilling. And so having not seen any of those three guys for 2 weeks, I'm actually pretty pleased at what we've seen on the defensive side of the ball. The numbers against UCF were rough, but a lot of that is based on their tempo, how many snaps they're going to get off a game. On a per-play basis, we actually didn't look all that bad. We gave up in the high 40s for success rate, which the national average is about 42%. So that's below average, but it's not terrible. And we gave up about 6.5 yards of play. Again, national average is about 5.7, so below average, but not terrible. Against Florida State, we were dominant on a per-play basis. We gave up about 3.7 yards per play, which was less than we gave up to anybody last year, including Division I AA Citadel. So just the upside, the ability that we've seen from the defense in these first 2 weeks has me excited that side of the ball has really turned a corner, because especially in the last few years of the Johnson era, that was by far the weakness, and that was where Collins came in seemingly able to make the quickest strides, and I think we're starting to see some of the fruit of that.
You mentioned that the score lines don't tell the entire story. Of course, 13 points given up against Florida State, 49 against UCF. Which performance do you put more weight into? Which one do you think is more representative of the team, or is it somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, you know, you look at the offensive lines and the quarterbacks that those two teams have, and my guess would be that the combination that UCF has is going to be, you know, one of the two or three best that we're going to see this year, up there with Clemson and Notre Dame. And then what Florida State's trying out there right now is probably still in the bottom three of offensive line and quarterback combos that we're going to see. So my guess is it's somewhere in the middle. It's not going to be a 3.5 yards of play kind of defense by any stretch, but the amount of explosive passing plays that UCF was able to complete, I don't see anybody other than Clemson on the schedule who's going to be able to do something like that.
What is the identity of this defense for someone who hasn't seen before? What's the strongest unit, and how do they stop people?
Sure. Strongest unit's definitely the secondary, and I would say in particular the group of safeties that we've got. The two starters are number one and number two, Wanya Thomas and Tariq Carpenter. Both are really good at run support, bigger guys. Wanya in particular is a really good center fielder who can drop back into deep coverage. He's the number 15 safety in the country right now, according to PFF. I think last year he was the second or third rated safety in the conference. So he's probably the best overall player. In my charting numbers, there wasn't a single target where he was the primary defender against UCF last week. He was certainly not the one who was responsible for all the explosive passing plays. So that's going to be the real strength. The best corner right now, since Swilling's not playing, is a guy named Miles Sims. He was a transfer from Michigan that we added last year, and he has really played well in these first 2 weeks. And so I think you'll see a lot of throws opposite his side of the field. The prevailing identity from the coaches speak is that we are an effort-based defense. And every time we hear that, we laugh and we think, which defense is not effort-based? But that's how they like to describe it. From my perspective, I would say we're a pretty aggressive attacking style. We often are going to have the corners up and press man. We're going to bring linebackers and the nickel back on blitzes pretty frequently. Last week, Charlie Thomas is one of our two nickelbacks. He had three tackles for loss against UCF and was really one of the few bright spots. And so he's a guy that Syracuse is going to have to block, especially on passing downs, because they're going to bring him a lot.
And interesting, you mentioned pressure, because even though the safeties are maybe the most talented group, they've had a lot of good play off the defensive line so far. I think the single player sack leader for Georgia Tech had 2.5 last season, already a couple guys with 2, and 5 sacks as a team through 2 weeks versus 17 last season. So how has that pressure been created? Does it start from the back, or are guys up front doing a better job?
Yeah, the two ends in particular who have been responsible for a lot of that. The first is a guy named Curtis Ryans, and he was the guy who had 2 sacks and a forced fumble against Florida State. He actually didn't play this past week, and they haven't specified why. So, you know, there's speculation that it was COVID related, some kind of quarantine. We're being told to expect that he'll be back this week. So hopefully everything's fine there. The other defensive end who's really done a great job creating pressure is a kid named Jordan Dominick. He was a freshman last year, only was able to play in the last 6 or 7 games of the year, but I think he ended up 4th on the team and tackles for loss, and he's really picked up where he left off. He's, in my opinion, the guy with the brightest upside from a pass rushing standpoint. And the third guy you'll see in there is a guy from Belgium who's still only a couple of years into playing football. His name's Sylvain Yungian, and he played really well against UCF, was able to get in the backfield several times, has done a really good job on setting the edge. And so I think what you've seen is a combination of those defensive end take a real step forward, as well as some pressure coming from the back end has caused that spike in pressure so far this season.
If you were Dino Babers or someone on his coaching staff for Syracuse, what are the weaknesses, or the main weaknesses that you're trying to point out in this defense to exploit?
I would say power running and deep passing. So we have not stopped a single power running situation so far this year, which is, you know, 3rd and 1 or 2 or less, and 4th or 1 or 2 or less. We just don't have the meat at defensive tackle. We haven't for years. And so there's really a chance to gash us with power inside runs, but then there's also a chance to take advantage of the aggressiveness of the secondary and hit shots over the top. The first week against Florida State, there was one just egregious drop on what would have been about a 65-yard touchdown, and then there was a couple others that Blackman just overthrew, but they were there. And then last week, you get a quarterback, Mike Gabriel, and he actually hit several of those shots. So those are the things that are really left over from last year's weaknesses, and we haven't seen a lot of improvement in either of those.
That creates an interesting matchup for Syracuse, because I wouldn't consider them by any stretch of the imagination to be a power-running team, but they do like to throw the ball deep. How do you see the matchup of Tommy DeVito, the offensive line, the running backs that are available now after the opt-outs versus the Georgia Tech defense?
You know, when I look at the numbers from the first 2 weeks, I feel good about it from a Tech standpoint. I mean, Syracuse has really struggled to be efficient on offense, to sustain drives. And to me, it reminds me of what we saw against Florida State, where we were able to generate a pretty good bit of pressure. And so I'm optimistic that that's going to be the case from the Tech side of the ball. On the other hand, if we don't get home with that pressure, if you miss a tackle or two, the opportunities to hit a deep ball really do worry me. My guess is that that's going to be how Syracuse is going to put points on the board if they're going to. It's going to be explosive plays. It's probably not going to be really long, drawn-out drives. I can see a couple of quick scoring drives that Syracuse might put together where they hit a deep ball and take advantage of the aggression. But on a play-to-play basis, I like our defense to control things more often than not up front.
Which number was the one that made you more optimistic? The 32 passing yards from Tommy DeVito, or the 15 sacks allowed by the offensive line through the first 2 weeks of the season?
just given what our weakness has been with sacks in the past, I think seeing that sack number has me pretty excited that this could be a week where we even beat that Florida State number of three. For us, that's a monumental number, but maybe we can even hit the rarefied airs of four this week against a weaker offensive line. I think there'll definitely be a chance for Tech to get pressure, you know, coming from the edge and bringing some of those packages where we've got six guys rushing, especially some of the smaller, quicker guys that we like to bring off the edge. I can see that really causing some problems for Syracuse.
It's funny that you say that. I think if we got a group of the Syracuse and Georgia Tech fans all in a room and we all agreed on four sacks, everyone would leave happy. I think yeah, both teams right now would take four sacks as a plus for you and a plus for Syracuse, and we could all go home. I want to transition a little bit here now to special teams, tying that in with defense. And punting has been very above average for Georgia Tech. As for Syracuse, Nolan Cooney's done a good job here. Kicking, though, has been a bit of a problem for the Yellow Jackets. What's going on right now with Jude Kelly, who's 1-for-4 on field goal attempts and 2-for-3 on extra points?
Well, it's more what's been going on for the last 4 years, but we haven't played you guys in that interim, so you haven't paid as much attention. But since Harrison Butker went to the NFL after the 2016 season, we have not had any consistency in the kicking game. And so we had two kids who were on scholarship as kickers last year. Both had eligibility remaining. Both are not on the team this year. They brought in six walk-ons to compete and try to find somebody. And so, you know, as you saw, they landed on Jude Kelly as the place kicker for week one. There's a transfer from UCLA named Austin Kent, who's been handling the kickoffs, and he's actually been doing quite well. I think our touchback percentage is over 50%, whereas last year we were, I think, bottom three in the country in that. But on the place kicking side, last week Collins took the blame for it. He said that he hadn't given him enough live reps because he was afraid of the close person-to-person contact you have on the kicking games in light of COVID stuff. And so he said that he was going to give more live reps in that, but we'd see the difference in week two. The one kick that Kelly tried was absolutely horrendous. Didn't seem to matter how many reps they had taken. And so on the extra points after that, we trotted out Gavin Stewart, who's another one of the walk-ons. He's a younger brother of a beloved wide receiver here named Brad Stewart from a few years ago. And so he's probably the fan favorite right now. I don't think that he has, you know, the leg strength, but we're going to be trying a whole lot of kicks past 40 or so, but there's hope that he can at least be better and a reliable option on things where we get inside of, you know, 35 yards or so. So what I'm anticipating is that you're going to continue to see a priority on going for it on fourth down. There was a play in the third quarter against UCF where we had 4th and 3, I want to say from like the UCF 21. And Collins in the past would have kicked there every time, and we went for it, converted. I think you're going to see a lot more of that happen, unless it's a 4th and pretty long where they may try a field goal. But it's bad, and there's not a whole lot of reason to think that it's going to get better at this point.
So two teams in Syracuse and Georgia Tech who have had some success on defense, not as much success on offense, although I would say the two are pretty far apart still in how they've had success on offense. What is your score prediction going into this game? If you had to pick Georgia Tech, Syracuse, I think that the Jackets today were 8.5-point favorites when I woke up this morning. What do you think?
I just finished putting together my written preview that'll go up tomorrow, and the score I landed on was 28-14. I think you'll see Tech have pretty good efficient success in the short and intermediate passing game. Assuming we don't have 5 turnovers like last week, I would anticipate being able to convert 1 or 2 more of those drives into scores. And like we said, I think Syracuse will hit 1 or 2 deep, but in terms of a play-to-play efficiency basis, I think Tech has the upper hand on that side of the ball. So I'd take Tech 28-14, which means I guess I'd take Tech and give the points. It feels like a matchup that is about as good as it could be for our relative strengths and weaknesses as a team right now.
Robert Binion, thank you so much for providing us with some context on the defense. You can go check out Robert at the Rumble Seat, or from the Rumble Seat, pardon me, Georgia Tech's SB Nation affiliate. We will check back up with you on that score check over Twitter later this week. Thank you for coming on. We hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, man. It's great to be with you, and look forward to noon on Saturday.
Another thank you to Robert Binion for giving us a little more insight on the GT defense. and going up against that GT defense, that struggling Syracuse offense. But the silver lining through weeks 1 and 2 for Syracuse is Tony White's 3-3-5. The defense has looked really strong. I'm going to say in 6 of the 8 quarters you've seen so far, and you can blame the 2 bad ones simply on fatigue. The offense is not spending enough time on the field. The defense is getting gassed. But Syracuse's defense overall through the first 2 weeks has looked really strong on the plus side of the turnover margin and really starting to find itself. And I was not necessarily sold on how quickly the 3-3-5 would be able to work, but in the first 2 games against 2 decent offenses, it seemed to hold its own.
Yeah, they looked very solid. I mean, I don't want to completely overreact because, you know, this Pitt game easily could have been 30-10 last week, if not for 3 missed field goals. But given what they have to deal with in terms of no field possession help from the position help from the offense and really just no time off the field to rest, they've done very well. Also, a ton of young guys on this defense.
Yeah.
Michael Jones has stepped up, as everyone knows, with, I think, 3 turnovers now forced in the first 2 games after none last year. So this is the worst offense they'll see out of the 3. They played 2 very solid offenses in the first 2 weeks. Georgia Tech can score as well, but this might be an opportunity for Syracuse to put up a stone wall here and see if they can actually try and win a game by themselves, which they've been essentially forced to do the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a young offense that Georgia Tech has to offer, rookie or a freshman quarterback, freshman running back. So the 3-3-5 is, I'm assuming, going to throw something at them that they really have not seen in their football careers or at this level they would not have seen. And as we've mentioned before, when you get 1 week to prep for a defense that you've never really seen in your football career, it's a damn near impossible task to pull off, especially when you've got the youth that you see Georgia Tech having on the offensive side in terms of play calling and all of that stuff. So to see that situation, that matchup, I think it's a really good opportunity for Syracuse's defense to shine one more time. This is going to be the weakest of the 3 offenses they've seen so far. And as we noted, I mean, even the young guys, the new guys that you didn't necessarily know how they were going to be able to contribute on the defensive side, and maybe guys whose names you didn't even know coming into the season have really been able to shine. I mean, a couple of guys, Garrett Williams has looked really, really good. Stephon Thompson, I wasn't sure who he even was. When you look at the recruiting class for this year for Syracuse, he was not a name that jumped off the page. But for whatever reason, he was recruited by Tony White. White was on the recruitment for that. And so he obviously saw something in Thompson that gave him a starting role, and Thompson's really been able to run with it. So a couple of young guys, obviously the experience in the secondary has shown, and the defense has seemed to be able to keep the Syracuse offense in the game, you know, long enough, but the offense has got to give them a little bit of help on the way.
Yeah, this is a very interesting matchup against the freshman Jeff Sims at quarterback. I remember talking to Chris Cartman a couple weeks ago from Sun Devil Source at Arizona State. And he did say that one thing that can cause trouble to 3-3-5 is a mobile quarterback. If even though Syracuse gets a lot of, you know, coverage pressure and coverage sacks produced from this, Sims can stretch out that defense a bit, because as unpredictable as the 3-3-5 is, a mobile quarterback is unpredictable as well. But at the same time, both you and I have noted talking before the show, Georgia Tech turns over the ball a lot. They have turned it over 7 times in 2 weeks. Red zone turnovers. It's been what you expect when you throw a lot of freshmen into the fire on offense. Mm-hmm. And I think Sims can blow up this 3-3-5, but I also think that the 3-3-5 can blow him up easily. And Syracuse may have an opportunity to score a couple defensive touchdowns here if they can pick him off and take it for 6, or maybe even a scoop and score the good old-fashioned one.
Oh, yeah. And when you talk about the vulnerability of a mobile quarterback, that's not really something Syracuse has seen yet this season. You look at Sam Howell, you look at Kenny Pickett, not really the most mobile quarterbacks, obviously good passers. But Sims is going to be a brand new look and something that they haven't really had to deal with yet. But I think as much as it's a new look for the Syracuse defense, it's going to be a brand new look for the Georgia Tech offense as well. And you mentioned it, they've had turnover troubles all season long. And I think when you look at the mistakes that they've made, they're not going to be able to completely alleviate them going into this week. And I think that Syracuse secondary, as you said, is going to be able to pick some balls off, to pick a couple of turnovers up, And as you said, maybe the defense says, you know, if the offense isn't going to score, let's start putting some points up ourselves. And I would not be shocked. I would not be shocked to see a pick six or a scoop and score, as you mentioned, and maybe get the ball rolling that way. Give the offense some momentum going into, if they can get an early score from the defensive side, give the offense some momentum to try some things and the freedom to play with a lead.
100%. I think if you're Mykal Jones, if you're Andre Sisco, you're ball hawking right now. And if I'm Tony White, I'm doing it with through the lens that we want to contain. I'm sending pressure. Now, I don't want to, you know, send a lot of pressure right up the middle and allow Sims to dance around in the backfield, but make him uncomfortable, make him throw off balance into coverage. And the Syracuse secondary is the best facet of its defense. I think we all can see with Williams, Melifonwu, and Sisco back there. There's going to be some balls, some tip drills, some opportunities here for Syracuse to take over. And in my eyes, while we'll do score predictions a little later, that's the way that Syracuse can win this game. If they can force a lot of turnovers, and maybe even if they can't set up their offense in a great opportunity, score themselves, the Syracuse defense is going to have to propel the Orange to their first victory of the season.
Now, the Georgia Tech offense has not really thrived in the first 2 weeks. However, they have been putting up some big yardage. So to shine a little more intel as to what is actually going wrong and some of the silver linings to you know, mediocre offensive performances from the Yellow Jackets, we caught up with Ken Segura of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution to speak on that Georgia Tech offense and some of the integral pieces to that.
We're now joined by Ken Segura of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Ken, thank you so much for coming on with us today, and thank you so much for giving us a little bit of insight into some Georgia Tech football.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Happy to do it.
Now, I kind of wanted to start by just talking about your Georgia Tech coverage over the first 2 weeks. How different have things been for you?
It's been, you know, significantly different. Even going back to the preseason, like last year, for instance, we watched parts of pretty much every practice. You know, obviously talking to players and coaches in person in a press conference setting. You know, when you go to the games, yeah, there's no, you know, you're not getting their temperature checked, and you can have as many people in the press box as you want, and there's food, and you know, you go down to the game, the press, you know, press conference afterwards, and so yeah, that part's been different. You know, like everything I'm doing now is by Zoom. I went to the Florida State game and then the UCF game, you know, in the stadiums of both. But you know, you do the press conference afterwards by Zoom. There's, you know, it's very spaced out. It's very limited, you know, numbers in the press box. And so, and then on top of that, you know, the stadiums were only partially filled. And obviously, you know, at Syracuse, it'll be completely empty. So it's, I mean, in some ways, you know, once you start watching the football, you kind of, some of the other stuff kind of recedes, but certainly, yeah, it's unlike anything I've ever experienced, and I imagine that goes for everyone else too.
Yeah. Will you be making the trip up to Syracuse, or will this be your first remote coverage?
I actually will not, for various reasons, which you can probably guess at. This will be I was thinking about it. I mean, there have been games other times when I've had to miss for different reasons, but this is the first game I've been covering the team since 2011, that I've been able to go, but haven't, you know, have chosen not to. So, yeah, we'll see how that works out.
And in terms of, you know, Syracuse is in the talks now of starting to let in some limited capacity into the dome. How were things the first 2 weeks in terms of that first Florida State game and then in Bobby Dodd Stadium this past week?
As best I could tell, I think it was okay. I mean, obviously, that, you know, there's certainly a difference in that both those stadiums are open air. But I think Doak Campbell, it was 25% full, I think. And then Bobby Dodd Stadium, or Georgia Tech plays, was 20%. And they probably could have done a better job spacing out a little bit. I don't know that mask usage was – well, I know that mask usage wasn't, you know, complete. And so I imagine those are things that both schools are looking at and trying to figure out how best to monitor that. But yeah, I didn't hear any complaints, and I know I'm very sure that everyone that was there was glad to be back in the stadium and watching football and enjoying that part of life.
Yeah, definitely good to have, you know, everything back, and it seems like maybe in a week or two or a couple more weeks that Syracuse wants to try and start doing that. So I'll be interested to see, you know, how that procedure goes and what the capacity they end up landing on is. But into Georgia Tech, into football, into year two under Jeff Collins. So no more triple option from the Yellow Jackets. And so much so now that Georgia Tech, I believe, has the second most dropbacks in the country. What are some of the major switches you've seen offensively?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the major one is just the shift in scheme. Last year, they went to the spread and playing out of shotgun and going three and four wide sometimes, which is not things that were done with Paul Johnson's offense. And it didn't work very well last year. They were, you know, near the bottom in total offense and scoring. But you can definitely, I mean, at least through two games, it looks a lot different. The offensive line is better. You know, they've gotten bigger. They've had a couple pieces that are new, a grad transfer and a freshman. And so the size is different. You know, the players that are returning are bigger. And also just they've been in this offense for a year now. And I think so you can tell just like when teams are running stunts or blitzing, you can tell just those guys have a much better idea of how to handle those things up front. Quarterback obviously is different. Jeff Sims is a freshman. He was a four-star prospect. I think was dual threat, considered a dual threat guy. Has done really much better than you would think for a freshman to do. He's pretty poised. He doesn't panic. He's not like taken off at the first sign of pressure. He's able to kind of get out of trouble and make a decision with the ball. Except he's had a number of interceptions. But yeah, so that's different. Like you said, you know, they're throwing the ball a lot more and completing more passes. You know, when Georgia Tech threw the ball before, they didn't have as high a completion rate, but because they were, you know, defenses were so plugged into the run, that they threw a lot of play action and it was often pretty successful for a big yard. But this year, now they're just much more, you know, kind of standard looking offense where they're throwing short stuff, medium range and long. So it's definitely a different look. And this year they've been a lot more efficient than they were last year.
Yeah, they've really started to figure things out. The offenses look much better than I've seen it in a while. And, you know, through the first 2 weeks of ACC football, Georgia Tech, they're ranking top 25 in the nation in offensive yards per game, but they haven't necessarily been able to capitalize scoring-wise. You talked about the interceptions. It seems like a lot of missed opportunities. Is that what's really been the case for them?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but they've been in the red zone. Like for instance, against UCF, they lost 49-21. They were in the red zone, really deep inside the red zone, their first three possessions, and they came away with 7 points. The first possession, they scored a touchdown. The second, they fumbled, Jeff Sims fumbled. And the third, they had a field goal blocked, which has been an issue. And so, obviously, UCF is one of the, you know, best offenses in the country. And once you do that, you know, you come away only with 7 points when you really could have gotten at least 17, at least 13, I guess, but probably 17. Mm-hmm. You're really kind of putting yourself in a tough spot. So, it wasn't just that case. They've been against Florida State, it was the same sort of deal. I think you put some of it on Jeff Sims, just learning to manage, you know, quarterbacking in the red zone and there were other, you know, just other things. But yeah, certainly against Syracuse Saturday, that'll be something that, you know, I'm sure both sides will be cognizant of, and Tech will be trying to be more efficient, and Syracuse will, I guess, be hoping that they, you know, they figured something out and can continue that pattern with the Tech.
Both offenses struggling to capitalize in the red zone, I think we could say. I think Syracuse threw nine times they've started in the opposing's territory or the opposition's territory, and they've put up 9 points from those nine trips. So not really the success rate you're looking to have in order to win football games. But you talked about a little bit the missed field goals and the blocked field goals more. So I don't think he's really missed as much as just the blocks. Is there anything that the coaches have talked about, anything changes-wise that you're going to see in terms of approach, or have they talked about that at all, or is it just something that you're going to try and get over with time?
A little bit. So the first game against Florida State, Jude Kelly, he's a freshman walk-on. He won the job in the preseason. He had three kicks blocked. I think it was two field goals and an extra point, and then he actually went on to his credit to make the game winner.
Yeah.
And then against UCF, he had another field goal blocked from 32 yards. it certainly looked like, at least on they're out of the four, two, maybe three, they had some issues with protection where guys were getting through the line and were able to get their hands up. I don't know if that's entirely the problem. Obviously as a kicker, you want to get the ball up quick, but so after that miss by Jube Kelly, they brought in another kicker, Gavin Stewart, who made, I think it was two extra points cleanly. It looked like the protection was better. I don't know that I put it all on. Once you got a new kicker, the problem solved. And so I'm sure Syracuse is taking a good hard look at that and maybe figuring out, you know, these are the gaps to attack or whatever. But certainly it's very unusual to have four kicks blocked in two games. So that is something they've got to figure out, and maybe it's behind them now, but we'll see, you know, more on Saturday.
I wanted to talk about the freshman impact on the offensive end. You talked about Sims already a little bit, but I was huge on this recruiting class for you guys and the Yellow Jackets, just because it seemed like they were really just outdoing themselves in terms of where they fell, in terms of the national rankings and in 24/7's composite and all of that. A guy that didn't play week one, but really had that nice breakout last week, Jahmyr Gibbs. How did he really acclimate into this offense and has really shown some success early on for you?
You made a really good point about the recruiting. Jahmyr is kind of a good example, maybe the best example of what Jeff Collins and his staff have been able to do from a recruiting standpoint. I think what you saw a lot with Paul Johnson, and then obviously to his everlasting credit, they won a ton of games. They won an Orange Bowl, got to another, I think won an ACC championship. They're recruiting however much weight you want to put in that was often in the 40s and 50s. And what happened often was that, you know, they would get on, they would find guys, get a commitment, and maybe they'll blow up as seniors in Georgia or Auburn or Alabama or whomever it was, would kind of come in the hunt and they would lose a lot of those guys. Jahmyr, not always, but often. But so anyway, Jahmyr was someone that Georgia Tech, again, found early. Tashard Joyce, the running back coach, they got a commitment from him in May. And then he just went crazy as a senior, and all the kind of the schools you expect came after him again. And he held firm with Tech. And again, I think that kind of speaks a little bit to kind of what Georgia Tech, Jeff Collins are trying to do, or they're having been able to do. And so anyway, so he missed first game, second game, his first touch as a collegiate player, he fields a kickoff at the four and runs it back 75 yards. And I simply like, wow, this is some different. And he finished the game with, I think it was 219 all-purpose yards. He scored twice, you know, fast, accelerates really quickly, shifty, good vision, can catch the ball out of the backfield and play out of the slot. So he just looks like someone who can do a lot of damage for you. And so he was ACC Rookie of the Week. Jeff Sims won it, you know, the week before. I think it was the first time since 2004 that Georgia Tech had won ACC Rookie of the Week back-to-back with different players. So not that it means everything, but it means something, I think, just that, you know, this seems like a really strong class. We've got another freshman, Jordan Williams, who's playing right tackle. So it's the makings of a pretty, you know, you would think in a few years, maybe even this year, a team that'll be much better than people think.
And despite two kind of lopsided scoreboards for Syracuse over the last 2 weeks, but the defense has looked really strong in terms of Tony White's 3-3-5. How do you think Georgia Tech will match up, and has there been any conversation onto the approach and the preparations for going up against a new, very unique type of defense?
We spoke with the coaches yesterday, both coordinators and Jeff Collins. I'll be honest with you. I think we're so kind of still getting through the weeds of what's going on at Georgia Tech. We didn't ask a ton about Syracuse. The defense coordinator spoke very highly of the offense, just saying that, you know, obviously the numbers are what they are, but they played two pretty good defenses. But, 3-5 obviously is a little different. I think the offensive line has been pretty solid against pressure, and Jeff Sims has handled himself. But obviously, you know, I'm sure having, you know, a 3-3 alignment, it, I think, gives you more options as far as where you attack and who attacks. And so that'll probably be kind of the next step, another another challenge for him as far as identifying, you know, him in the line and identifying blitzes and picking them up and handling them with your hops and so forth. So, I'm sure they're plenty aware of what Syracuse can do and you know, will be prepared, you know, do their best to prepare against a different kind of scheme.
Let's go macro for one last question here. Huh? I mean, Georgia Tech was finished to place last in the ACC right. by a lot of people, including probably myself early on in the mm-hmm. season. But through the first 2 weeks, they've shown a lot more promise than I really anticipated. Where do you kind of see them finishing this year out?
That's a tough one. I'd have to look back at the schedule a little bit more. But yeah, so they play 11 games. You know, obviously that you start out with Clemson and Notre Dame. Those are two tough games for anybody. And so, let you know, just if you toss those out for argument's sake, that leaves you with 7 games left. You know, I don't know that anyone – I guess Pitt's pretty good too, but I don't know that, you know, the way they've shown themselves in the first two games. I mean, like the UCF game, obviously, 49-21, it looks like a blowout. But I think you go back to what you were saying before about not playing well in the red zone. If those things get cleaned up
– They were in that game.
What's that?
They were in that game.
Right. Yeah. It was a one possession game late in the third quarter. And actually, early in the fourth. There's no reason why they can't win 3 or 4 of those 7, and that gets you to 4 or 5 wins. And who knows if this team is getting better. And obviously, guys like Sims and Gibbs, you would expect to continue to the progress to ramp up. Maybe they win, 5. And obviously, everything's up in the air with injuries and COVID and quarantine, you know, guys getting in contact and tracing and so forth. But yeah, at least, on paper, I think obviously the ceiling, I think, is a lot higher than pretty much anybody thought.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Ken, thank you so much for taking the time. That's Ken Segura of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We wish you the best this season in terms of safety in your coverage and obviously just everything else you've got going on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Owen, thanks. It was my pleasure.
That was Ken Segura of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution giving some insight onto the offense for Georgia Tech. We caught up with Robert Binion earlier in the show to talk about the Georgia Tech defense. And in terms of prediction, he had it 28-14 Georgia Tech, said Syracuse could burn them deep once or twice. But at the end of the day, he thinks the Yellow Jackets are going to be able to win this one by 2 scores. Ben, where do you kind of see this game falling? Because I personally might see an upset brewing in this one.
I'm not as optimistic as you are. I'm picking a little closer than Binion. I'm going to go a 1-score affair here. I'm going to go 20-13. That's my thing. I think Syracuse will score a touchdown. I'm not exactly sure how, probably defensively, honestly. But I think the Orange can stay in this one just because I think Georgia Tech is very turnover prone and that the defense will hold them in long enough. You know, I think it'll be one of those classic Syracuse gets the ball back with a chance to drive down the field in 1 score, but I just don't see how they consistently build drives, even against a Georgia Tech defense that in plays like the long ball is weak where Syracuse is strong. I just don't have enough faith right now in them putting it together from what we saw from Pitt in 7 days to what we're going to see at the Dome on Saturday.
Give me Syracuse 28-17. I think they take this 28. One. They're +8, throw a little bit on the spread, throw some on the money line. I think Syracuse can pull this one off. It's one of those situations where, yes, I know everything we've said in this show regarding Syracuse's offense has been terrible, but Georgia Tech's defense is not good. They don't have much going for them, and I think that Syracuse and Tommy DeVito are going to finally have enough time to let DeVito figure some things out. And that's not going to be indicative of the rest of the season by any means, but I think that this is going to be the week where, I mean, you remember it last season, right? When everyone wrote the entire offense off, they put up, 45 points against Duke. Everything offensively clicked. I think this is going to be that week where the offense clicks when there's really no rationale behind why it does, besides the fact that I think they can do enough against a very weak Georgia Tech defense, and Syracuse's defense is going to be able to hold Georgia Tech in check offensively. They have a lot of youth, and yes, I love what they have to offer in the youth. They brought in a really good recruiting class. And I think Syracuse's defense, the 3-3-5, is going to be a little bit too much for them to get too much going because of that youth at quarterback, because of the youth at running back. And Syracuse is going to be able to take this one 28-17. I'll call the upset, and I know that it might be outlandish, and I could be biting my words come next episode, but I got a good feeling about this for Syracuse, and I think they can pull it off.
I don't think the win call is outlandish. I am surprised you went four scores for the Orange. I'll be more than happy, win or lose, if Syracuse puts up 28 points next week. I agree with you, though, in a certain sense. As bad as the offense has been through the first 2 weeks, we have to remember that they were just finding out in training camp about guys opting out, about waiver transfers like Chris Blake. There has been a lot going on, like every team, but I think especially recently for Syracuse. And I expect Tommy DeVito, regardless of result, to top his passing yardage total in this one game from the previous two. He had 144 yards against Pitt and North Carolina combined. I think he at least throws for 200 and redeems himself a little bit, because at this point, people talk about the pressure. At this point, I mean, I think they're playing with house money. If Tommy DeVito throws a touchdown pass, people will be happy next week. There's really not much that anyone is expecting from this 0-2 Orange team, but we'll see. I agree with you that this game is a toss-up in the fact that I picked a loss, you picked a win. Both of them, though, not separated by more than a soft two-possession game, which is a term I learned from a former SU or current SU alum, Tyler Aki, which is a touchdown field goal two-possession game. So a soft two-possession win for you there at 28-17. I like it. I'm excited to see what happens under that new dome roof that we've decided to make the story for this week to distract from the football team. It'll be fun.
Yes, the home opener for Syracuse football. They take on Georgia Tech at noon on Saturday. Game's not going to be on TV unless you're going to stream it, so even more the reason to catch it on 88.3 FM or WAER.org. Our coverage starts at 11:30, taking you all the way to 5 o'clock at the conclusion of the double overtime. Follow along with us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod for our thoughts throughout the game, for our thoughts leading up to the game, for even more content, including some Chris Blake takes as more information has come out about that. So at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. And, you know, whenever you're listening to our podcast, maybe you want to give us a rating. 5-star rating, obviously appreciated. Write us a review. Let us know your thoughts on the show. Very, very appreciative out of us. And it goes a long way in terms of what we're able to do. So for Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Thank you so much. We'll catch you next week.